We interrupt your position previews to bring you a random show on a Friday where we talk about a lot of stuff. Adam Azer, Al Melchior, and Scott White. And before the show started, Scott said to me, "What exactly are we talking about today?" Good question, Scott. We're going to talk about everything. We're going to talk about Dexter Fowler and takeout slides. And remember, I said you and Al were going to have to debate Xander Bogaerts versus Francisco Lindor.
I totally don't remember that, but
you were. Yeah, you weren't there. It was Heath and I yesterday. He said that.
Yeah. Oh, Al. Yeah. Thanks for letting me know, Adam.
Well,
no. So nobody knew what we were talking about. I think you referred to this show as a grab bag, Adam, which took me back to my days hanging out at the trading card store where you'd buy the envelope with just random cards thrown in it that probably weren't so random. They were probably the junk cards pulled out of the packages with the good ones under the case. But I fell for it anyway because the allure of the unknown.
Well, we're hoping our listeners fall for this.
And this reminds me of Little League when you would go to the concession stand after the game and get the white mystery Airhead. And
oh, yes.
Just hoping that it was cherry flavored, which just begs the question, why didn't I just buy the cherry flavored if I was just hoping?
Because you're a thrill seeker.
Yeah, I guess so. But anyway,
Airheads
that's
are good.
That's
Airheads. Airheads are probably my favorite non-chocolate candy.
Really? When was the last time you had an Airhead?
Yesterday.
No way. Wow, I was not expecting that.
I keep a little bag in the drawer of my desk at home.
That's
when I have a hankering.
Really cool. What's your second favorite flavor? Because obviously cherry's number one.
Wait.
I'm going to guess it's sour apple.
Well, you know, I buy the little bag with the fun size ones in it, and they only have four. Cherry, which is the best. Orange, watermelon, and blue raspberry. Orange is probably my second favorite of those four.
Okay. Works for me. Hey, email
Sorry,
us.
That was an unimpressive answer.
Yeah, it was pretty lame. Email us about it, Airheads or baseball, fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Please put baseball podcast. Actually, put whatever you want in the subject line. Fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. We will read a lot of emails today about some strategy, ranking players. One of our emailers wants us to sort out Carlos Carrasco versus Dallas Keuchel versus Noah Syndergaard. Who do you like best? So we'll let you guys do that. One person asks, are Giancarlo Stanton and Andrew McCutchen really worthy of first-round picks? So I'll let you answer that when we get to it. But first, let's have a rankings dispute. Xander Bogaerts or Francisco Lindor? Xander Bogaerts or Francisco Lindor? Yesterday, Scott made his case for Lindor, and we kept mentioning that, you know, Al's higher on Bogaerts, lower on Lindor. So, Al, go ahead, answer the question, sir.
Bogaerts is my guy, and it's a combination of the fact that he was the highest scoring shortstop among those who are currently eligible at shortstop, so we're excluding Manny Machado. And I don't think it was a fluke, and actually I think there's room for growth for Bogaerts because he showed last year his ability to hit for batting average, using more of the field, which was a big departure from what he did as a rookie. And there's still the power potential that he showed as a prospect that hasn't really been realized yet. So I think he's got actually more offensive upside than Lindor has, and he's already demonstrated that he's able to produce at a very high level for a full season, which is, again, we saw Lindor produce at a very high level for about a month and a half, and a pretty good level before that when he was called up. But I think Bogaerts has done more and has higher upside potential based on what he did in the minors offensively.
Okay, Scott. Now, the Lindor fan, Scott White, go ahead.
Well, I mean, yeah, Bogaerts was the top shortstop in fantasy last year, but that's because he got to play a whole season. And on a per-game basis, Lindor beat him by 0.35 points with a game, which doesn't sound like much, but trying to find a good example. Yeah, it's a lot. It's
that's
like
a
the
lot.
Difference between Miguel Sano and Trevor Plouffe. So, I mean, that... You know, you want evidence that a guy can be a high-end player. That to me, shows that Lindor's done it more so even than Bogaerts has. And I get what Al's saying about, well, okay, if Bogaerts takes the contact ability he showed last year and puts it with the power he showed 2 years ago, he could be a great player. And I don't disagree with that necessarily. I just don't know how willing I am to invest in it, considering the gains he made in batting average last year. Seemed like to have those gains, he needed to sacrifice some power because he hit more ground balls. He went the other way more, things that would cut into the home run total. So I just don't know for sure that he's going to be able to combine those skills. Now, there's reason to be skeptical of Lindor's performance last year, particularly with the power, but I think they're similar players in terms of what kind of average they can hit for. I just think Lindor at least has the speed to fall back on that Bogarts doesn't.
And Al, actually, yeah, that's kind of, I wanted you to weigh in on Lindor. You talked about your Bogarts expectations, but mm-hmm. Lindor with the power that sort of came out of nowhere, what are you expecting from Lindor this year?
Yeah, big power regression. You know, and look, if that doesn't happen, it wouldn't be the first time that a highly touted prospect came up to the major league level and actually blew away his minor league numbers. So I'm not saying that it can't happen, but typically it doesn't. And when you look at the power surge in the last month and a half for Lindor, and you yourself made the argument, Adam, that a lot of times you face inferior pitching. A lot of that power came against either pitchers who were fly ball prone and not very good, or lefties who he has crushed throughout his minor league career. So I do expect that Lindor is going to be really good against lefties. He's going to be a great DFS play based on matchups. But in terms of, you know, season long with weekly lineup changes, I just think, you know, the power might be bunchy, but overall, I think he's going to have sort of middling power like he did in the minor leagues.
Okay, I think that concludes our Xander Bogaerts versus Francisco Lindor discussion. So I wanted to talk about what I am struggling with the most, and I feel like, you know, I'm only bringing this up because I feel like a lot of fantasy owners on draft day might struggle with it as well, and that's just the first base and outfield landscape. Traditionally, these are your best hitters in baseball, right? I mean, first base, outfield, these are your sluggers. Obviously, yeah. There are exceptions.
Traditionally, sure.
Yeah. This year, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum. We haven't done our outfield preview yet, but we've talked about it a lot with first base. It's not as deep as it used to be, and there is a pretty big drop-off after Abreu and Chris Davis down to the Hosmer Freeman, Adrian Gonzalez group. And then outfield, you know, do you guys agree outfield seems pretty top-heavy, and once you get past, like, I don't know, 12 outfielders or so, I'm not really in love with, like, if you wait later, you know, there are good outfielders, but the, I don't know, rounds like 6-7 outfielders, maybe I'm not loving. Like, is it also a top-heavy position, kind of like first base outfield?
It is. I don't think I, as am concerned, I don't think, man, I'm mixing up words, as am concerned. I don't think I am as concerned as you and Al are. I do think there is this gap between like round 6 and round 9 where I, you know, like there's just really not an outfielder worth reaching for. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like outfield is kind of depth proof because there are so many players at the position.
Yeah.
And there are always newcomers at the position, always players with upside at the position that by the end of the season, I don't think, particularly in a 3 outfielder league, I don't think there's going to be many issues where somebody's like, man, I can't fill that 3rd outfield spot for the life of me. I think it's more like there's going to be, I can't get this 4th outfielder in my lineup. So I don't know that you need to sell out for it on draft day like you would potentially first base this year.
Right. No, I see totally where you're coming from, and it is the easiest position, offensive position, to fill on waivers throughout the year. But I guess here's my dilemma. Like, I feel like I am in danger of passing up some really good players like a Jose Altuve or a Carlos Correa because I'm sort of obsessing over getting a first baseman and an outfielder with my first two picks, especially first base.
And I think there's something to that. And I've been in a very similar position in most of our drafts, and now we've done some auctions as well. Now, as Scott said, in a 3 outfielder league, I'm going to be, I think, a little more inclined to go after, you know, an Altuve or Carlos Correa, because I could probably get a suitable first outfielder in the third round. And then with that second outfielder, there's a lot of risk in that tier, but, you know, I feel okay about waiting a little while on that. And third outfielder, I'm not worried about at all. So Roto, it's a little bit of a different thing because you really do have to assure that you've got, I would say, at least two and preferably three really solid outfielders. And it's hard to do, especially if right. you don't get the jump on that first one early.
Yeah, Scott, I don't know. You want to weigh in on this and how you balance not that
I, like
many
I said,
elite
I
outfielders?
Really,
Let's
I
talk
I
five
don't
outfielders.
Care that much about filling that outfield spot early. Now, obviously, if I have one of the first two picks, it's Trout or Harper. If I have the sixth or seventh pick, it's probably going to be Stanton. If I have the first or second pick of the second round, I'm definitely going to take AJ Pollock. I'm not going to pass up an outfielder for a weaker position. Because I don't think outfield is necessarily deeper than any infield spot this year, but I'm not going to reach for an outfielder just to fill an outfield spot either. I think there's definitely benefits to getting the best second baseman Altuve at the appropriate time or the best shortstop Correa if it's, you know, as long as you're not going mid first round for him. And then, you know, if you get if you're in a spot to draft Arenado or Machado in the first round, first base may actually be the bigger priority in the second round. So Votto or Encarnacion would be a good player to pair with them rather than, you know, stretching for an outfielder. So, mm-hmm. you know, I think Al said round three, he felt like he could be comfortable getting his first outfielder at that point. I think round four is probably the ideal time, provided you didn't already get one in rounds one and two. Round three is usually the big starting pitcher run, so I want to get in on that. Round four, you still have the JD Martinez, Adam Jones, Ryan Braun types.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz.
Yeah. And
Martinez, according to ADP, is going 33rd overall. But you do have Cruz, Cespedes, Gomez, Adam Jones, Ryan Braun.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with those as my first outfielder, provided, you know, I didn't just happen to land in the spot to get a better outfielder than that.
And well, I think this is what, you know, you say, Scott, you're not as concerned as I am and maybe not as much as Adam. I think this is where the difference is, and I've said this before on the podcast, that I see sort of a 7-7 scheme with the first baseman and outfielders. That is that there are seven players at each position, and Chris Davis is one at both positions, where I'm really comfortable with them. Now, an outfield, and this is based on my rankings and not on ADP, I'm looking at 8 through like 15, and really I could go 17, and every single player there I see is very risky. Not to say that I wouldn't, you know, be okay with them as mm-hmm. a first outfielder, but if I've got my option between somebody in the 1-7 and somebody in the 8-17, it's a pretty strong preference as opposed to, you know, like we've talked about second base, where I'm okay to wait pretty much forever and ever.
You're not wrong in saying those players have some risk to them, but what would be the comparable infielders you'd be taking at that point? Don't they have their own red flags?
I'm trying to, and it isn't, again, not necessarily a dilemma between an outfielder and an infielder. Might be pitcher.
Yeah. Right.
But.
Well, wait, hold on. Because the point is, the infielders are going to have red flags there, but the outfielders are usually just so much more productive overall as hitters. Like, I expect the infielders that you're taking there, like D. Gordon, where would
you rank
him in your...
D. Gordon's going to be gone by the fourth round.
Oh, no, I meant like the second or the third round.
Okay.
You know, where would you rank those infielders among your outfielders? Like, they're probably not even going to crack the top 10, are they?
Well, D. Gordon's kind of a special case, obviously, because he's a... He specializes in things in Roto.
Yeah.
But...
And just to clarify, when you say where would they rank, now you're not talking about like in our top 300, you're saying in terms of production, we're not considering position scarcity at all.
Exactly.
Because if you say that, I would expect that they would nobody would crack the top 10.
Right, and sometimes I just want to get the best player available, and a lot of times that's an outfielder. But I just, you know, we have an outfield. We'll have outfield previews next week, so we can dive into it a little bit more. But I just want to say that the outfielder that I would not mind getting based on ADP and based on, you know, Al's rankings, he's outside his top seven. He's eighth for Scott, at least in points, and I'll check in Roto, is George Springer. I feel like there's a lot of Mookie Betts love going on. I don't really know why it's not happening the same way for George Springer. I feel like he could erupt. He's eighth for Scott in both points in Roto, and he's ninth for Al. And he's going a little bit later. Mookie Betts is going 22nd overall, and Springer's going 35th overall. And I am excited about George Springer. If I can get him in the third round or maybe even early in the fourth, I would do cartwheels.
Yeah, I think I've seen that happen a lot to Springer, too. I do prefer him much more in Roto than points because the strikeouts bring him down in points.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the power-speed combo props him up in Roto. To answer your infielders in the outfield question, D. Gordon, at least based on last year's numbers, and I'm looking at points leagues here since obviously he's a special case in Roto, he would have been the 12th ranked outfielder last year.
Okay.
So it's not far off.
No, it's not, but he would have beaten McCutchen. You expect, obviously, McCutchen to have a better year. He had a down year last year.
No, but McCutchen actually beat him.
He did?
Leagues. Yeah. McCutchen was
In points. In points.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hang on. 7th best outfielder.
I would come close to guaranteeing that Gordon was actually better than McCutchen in Roto last year. But it was probably, because McCutchen was actually the 14th best outfielder in Roto. But you're right, I'm sorry. Okay, all right, so...
Hang on. I'm a bad counter, apparently. Let me just... 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13... Okay, Gordon would have been the 15th best outfielder in points leagues, not the 12th.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll talk about it more next week. Let's do some news and notes, and let's try to do these sort of quickly here, because I want to get save time for emails, and news and notes, they bore me a little bit, not gonna lie. So, with that said, baseball tightening up its policy on takeout slides, and now the takeout slides and the neighborhood plays will be reviewable. I guess that means no more neighborhood play? Like, you have to be on the base?
I think that's the upshot of that, yeah.
I don't like that. I don't like it. It's not good.
Why?
I don't like the pop-up slide. Oh, look, his spikes came half an inch off the bag and the tag was still on him, so he's out. Like, that doesn't seem to be in the spirit of the rule to me.
Because you have to stay on the base, right?
Right.
Or make an attempt to stay on the base.
Right, but just the physics of it make it very difficult to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
It's going to be tough. It's going to be...
If you're not sliding gingerly... You know, it's a lot of safe calls have been overturned as out calls because of that. And I feel like with the neighborhood play, it's the same thing. The same thing's going to happen. A lot of, okay, well, the player really did what he was supposed to do to get the out, but we're going to call him safe on a technicality kind of thing.
So I still think that the takeout slides were, I personally think the dumbest thing in baseball. I can't think of a dumber thing in baseball. It just never made any sense to me. Like, if you don't want to hit into a double play, then don't hit a ground ball with a runner on first base. You know, it's not like, well, now the runner can go out of his way to try to break up a double play. It never made sense to me. So I'm glad that they are taking steps to eliminate it. But at the same time, I feel like there's gonna be an adjustment period. There's gonna be some disputable stuff and
yeah,
it's gonna be
yeah.
wild.
Yeah, no, the takeout's good. You're right. I was referring more to the neighborhood play.
Right. Right. All right. How about a fantasy baseball relevant news item? Al, Dexter Fowler said, screw you, Baltimore. I want less money and a 1-year deal, and I'm going to the Cubs for a guy who was the number 20 outfielder in points leagues and number 29 in Roto, and he's going to lead off for the Chicago Cubs. This is a pretty big deal. What do you think?
It's not really that big of a deal, I don't think.
Deal.
But, well, you know, fantasy impact aside, this is probably my favorite storyline of spring training and maybe the offseason so far, because it's just the whole way this was orchestrated,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, the Cubs intentionally kept this quiet and then Joe Maddon, you know, brought him to the pitcher's mound. Yeah. And didn't tell any of the players what was going on. And there were some quotes. I think it was Jason Hamill said, I thought he was going to bring a magician up here, you know, kind of a typical, you know, offbeat Joe Maddon thing. And so everybody was completely surprised when it was Dexter Fowler. So that's awesome. I'm sure Orioles fans listening right now don't see anything awesome about this, but, no. You know, in terms of fantasy, impact, I mean, it's a little better for him, I think, to be with the Cubs than the Orioles. Although I think I said on yesterday's podcast, I was liking the Orioles lineup a lot better now with Fowler on top of it.
Yeah.
But, so it's good news for, Hyunsu Kim, who will probably bat lead off, again, like he was initially, supposed to. This is, you know, probably a minor downgrade for Jason Hayward, who won't bat lead off.
But what about Jorge Soler? That's the,
it's really bad for him.
Yeah. It is, his mixed league value, I think, is pretty much shot because he's kind of in Javier Baez territory now with no place.
Without the versatility.
And I think it could really hurt Kyle Schwarber's value.
I have a harder time seeing.
Soler, I think, as his big, you know, provided they don't trade him, which I guess is possible, though Theo Epstein says they won't. In terms of upside, he's as big a part of the future as Schwarber is. So you'd think the Cubs would be motivated to keep him involved, and the most logical way to do that is to have him straight up platoon with Schwarber in left. So, yeah. I mean, there's the at-bat advantage Schwarber loses on the catcher, the rest of the catcher crop. He's still probably the second catcher, but he goes from getting more at-bats than most to fewer at-bats than most.
Well, is Schwarber going to catch it all? Because, like, could they platoon him in left field, but also give him a day behind the plate as well?
You know, I'd like to see that. I think we all would like to see that. I haven't seen anything about it one way or the other, but based on, you know, last season, I would think that he would be in that catcher mix, which is why I haven't gone, you know, haven't made any movement toward getting Miguel Montero in any drafts or auctions this year. Mm-hmm. So I think I would guess he'll be in that mix.
Hyunsu Kim, you mentioned him, Al, outfielder for the Orioles, potentially going to hit leadoff. What do we know about this guy? Is he someone that we should be drafting in fantasy?
Maybe late in a five outfielder league. It's so hard to know how somebody's stats are going to translate from Japan. You know, he had decent power numbers there. And, you know, we typically discount the Japanese power numbers because Korea. My apologies. Because the Korean parks tend to be very small, but his home park was, I think, the largest in the KBO. So, I have some hope that he might have some moderate power, especially playing in Baltimore. But the thing that the Orioles are counting on is on base percentage for him.
Well, look, I'll use Dexter Fowler as a comparison. Now, Fowler did have 20 steals and 17 home runs, but he only hit 250. He didn't have an overly impressive slash line except for his on-base percentage. Slash line for Fowler was 250, 346, 411. And that's pretty much in line with what he had done in his previous two seasons, but lower batting average, higher, more power. Also, a career low BABIP of 308. Fowler is a 341 career BABIP. Anyway, my point is, Dexter Fowler had the eighth most plate appearances in baseball last year. And he led off much of the season for the Chicago Cubs. And because of that, I think that's a big contributor to his finishing 20th overall in points and 29th overall in Roto. So, you know, you've got a guy in Hyunsu Kim leading off for one of the better lineups, probably. Machado, Chris Davis, Adam Jones, Matt Wieters, Mark Trumbo, Jonathan Scope behind him. This is a guy who could just, you know, plate appearance his way into being a borderline must-start guy for fantasy.
I suppose so. And like I said, the walks will probably help Kim. I imagine he'll score a lot of runs.
Right.
But without being confident in the power production, it's just hard to see him making the cut in a three outfielder league. But I think all those factors are going to make him relevant as a late rounder for Roto.
You know who he's probably going to be like, or at least how I see him being, is Nick Markakis, who, yeah, pretty much at some point during the season in every league, he gets a shot on somebody's roster just because he's so reliable.
Right.
But he's not exciting or, you know, he's not a standout in any way.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe Nori Aoki, same kind of thing. Yeah. I think I'll have more power than Aoki.
And that's kind of how I've always felt about Brett Gardner, who's in the news, by the way, because this is scary. He had a bone bruise in his left wrist that Gardner suffered in the wild card game against Houston, and he's still not 100%. And they're monitoring his left wrist. But his stock, I feel like, is pretty high this year compared to last year. But he finished the year horribly because he had a wrist injury. It was his right wrist last year. But another guy who's just sort of dependable, and when he's in the lineup, he scores runs, he does his job, he hits at the top of the order of a good order. But his wrist is an issue right now. So, how do you guys feel about Brett Gardner right now?
I don't know, Adam. You always seem to like him so much more than I do. I kind of lump him in with Dexter Fowler and Adam Eaton.
Yeah.
Guys who'll give you power and speed, but not a lot of either. And, whether they help you in batting average is kind of a toss-up as well. So they're just kind of... I like them more in Roto than points leagues because they have that category distribution. But I don't think they're especially high-end in either.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly sure what his wrist being monitored really signifies, but certainly anytime somebody is dealing with a hand-related injury, it can really be a lingering problem. And we saw how much it affected him in the second half last year.
Okay, so some more news items. Miguel Cabrera, he could start the season playing two games at third base as the Tigers open up with two interleague games at Miami. They actually play seven games in National League parks by mid-May. He would only need five appearances at third base to gain eligibility, and also, in turn, this could move Victor Martinez to first base for those early interleague NL park games. So there is a chance that Miguel Cabrera could gain third base eligibility by mid-May. Is that hot or what?
I think it's hot, yeah. I think it's pretty exciting. I think I need to look at moving him up a spot or two, which is doesn't sound like a lot, but I've already got him in my first round, so that means something. And yeah, I think it's going to have some impact on his value. And it seems very likely it's going to happen.
But we talked this podcast, we've talked other podcasts about how the shortage at first base from a mixed league perspective. How likely is it that somebody would play him at third base instead of first base? They wouldn't.
Let me answer that by saying
this. Okay.
I think that the value of a guy with multiple position eligibility is not felt on your team necessarily until you have an injury on the team. Mm-hmm. And then you can move him. Like if your third baseman gets injured, you can move him, and then you've got twice the player pool to pick up in free agency, because you can either look for a first baseman and move Miguel Cabrera to third, or you could look for a third baseman to replace your third baseman. So I think there is kind of a hard to quantify value to dual position eligibility that I really love in fantasy.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not disputing that. I don't know that it would be enough for me to move him up even a spot as high as I already have him, because I have him in the first round too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously a good thing for him.
Ryan Braun, according to Craig Counsell, will be ready for opening day. We'll preview outfielders next week. We'll talk a lot about Braun. Josh Hamilton's knee is already an issue. He's going to start the year on the DL, right? Josh Hamilton?
I haven't seen that, but it sure does sound like it, because the Rangers have a whole host of players competing for left field job. It doesn't sound like Hamilton's one of them.
All right, give me a name that you want to see win in left field for the Texas Rangers.
Oh, I'm not sure I can.
Joey Gallo would be the obvious one, right?
I think you're right. Yeah.
I'd like to see Jurickson Profar get a chance out there. He's played left field before in the majors.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. Tampa Bay might sign starting pitcher Blake Snell to a long-term contract. Is he going to have a chance to crack the rotation out of spring training? And how good is Blake Snell?
I would guess not out of spring training, but just this news to me signifies that, they plan to have him in the rotation, not just for a long time, but probably pretty soon. And his stats in the upper minors, I think, justify that. So I would expect Snell to be one of the early call-ups this year.
Yeah, actually, Jonah Carey drafted Blake Snell in our AL-only mock draft last week. Baltimore signed Yovani Gallardo. Yes, they did sign Yovani Gallardo after all. We know Jose Reyes on leave.
Are we sure? I don't think. Is it a done deal with Gallardo?
You know what? You might be right.
He shows up at Cubs camp today.
I thought it was fairly done. Because they,
he's already had the physical, but I don't know.
It's been reported, of course. You know, Fowler was reported as an agreement, but no, it's been reported that Gallardo's deal is official.
Okay.
Now, Joe Girardi thinks that Luis Severino can handle about 200 innings this year, so that's good. You don't have to necessarily worry about an innings limit with him.
And he had a little over 160 last year, minors and majors combined. So if we go by the Tom Verducci rule of thumb of 30%, he's well within that to get to 200.
Around the same time Girardi said this about Severino, the Mariners, I think it was Scott Servais, their new manager, said that neither Taijuan Walker nor James Paxton have innings limits. So that's just throwing that in there.
And real quick, too, while we're on a Yankee here, did you guys discuss yesterday the Yankees uniform numbering?
I think that's in one of our emails.
Okay, because yeah, I was going to say, we got a lot of response on that, and I thank everybody in advance for setting us straight on that.
Billy Hamilton, not 100% recovered from shoulder surgery, but right now he says he's where he expected to be. And Anibal Sanchez has tricep swelling. He's had some arm woes, so that's a bad sign here on February 26th.
Yeah, my brief time of viewing him as kind of a sneaky sleeper is over.
Okay. Let's read the emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. This is from Brian. I play in a head-to-head CBS points league where in the last 2 years, 12 starting pitchers have gone in the first two rounds. And this past year, 21 starting pitchers went in the first four rounds. 2014, 17 starting pitchers in the first four rounds. Anyway, I know my league may be an extreme case, but average draft position seems to indicate this is not completely uncommon. In a year where you want one of the top 18 starting pitchers, or I think we kind of want two. Well, two of the top what? How many pitchers do you want?
20.
20? Okay. Do I have to take a starting pitcher in the first round or two to try and take advantage of the big hitters that are making it through? Like, do you adjust to your league, basically, I think, is your league's draft trends, is what this question is asking.
Yes and no. You know, we typically advise taking hitters earlier than the ADP would suggest in that format because they're just because that's the right thing to do. Your team's going to end up better that way. But I think this year I've made the argument several times that there's a greater need to have that true ace or two. Just to keep up with the competition, because there's going to be so many aces out there that you're going to fall behind quickly in that head-to-head pitching matchup if you don't have someone who can reliably give you 25 to 30 points a start. So I think the idea that there are 20, or as he says, 18, depending on how you look at it, ace caliber pitchers. The thinking behind that is they're all ace caliber. You can be happy with any of them. You just need to have one of them. So if you're saying if you wait till round three, you're not going to get any of them, I do think you need to make sure you, in round two, make a play for one. And I guess the way to kind of avoid getting too caught up in the rush is to make sure you get a hitter also. So with one of your first two picks, go pitcher. One of them, go hitter. Is my advice in this particular instance.
All righty.
Hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, made sense. All right, here's Rod. He says, "Dear George, Willie, and Frank."
Now, all that's coming up for me is Brett Wilson and White. They're all Royals, but if I'm correct, I'm not sure what the other connection might be with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or I just
okay.
might be totally wrong.
We'll give them. We'll say they're Royals. All right. He said, "I was about to give up on you guys based on the horrible start to yesterday's podcast. However, the second half of the show was so good that it can only mean that you guys are in for one hell of a show today."
What did we do so bad at the start?
No, he's making fun of our second half splits. Not making fun, but making reference to our argument about second half splits.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, it's actually quite funny.
Yes.
And
I'm
he
not
says,
inside baseball enough for that joke.
Yeah. But he says, "Before I ask my question, I must correct you on the origin of baseball uniform numbers. Numbers weren't used to identify the positions they played, but rather the place in the in their batting order. Babe Ruth wearing 3, Lou Gehrig wearing 4. There you go, Al.
Yeah. Thank you. We got, you know, several people.
Yes.
Correcting us on that.
Okay, Rod's question. What is the viability of punting strikeouts and wins in a 15-team roto league with a 1,000-inning minimum? I'm considering the strategy. I would draft 5 or 6 relievers, at least 4 closers, and fill the rest of my lineup with cheap starters. I should have a team that is at or near the top in saves, ERA, and whip, and then I'd have better hitters. This is exactly what Heath and I talked about with Jonah Carey's AL-only roto team. He sacrificed starting pitching. His starting pitching stinks, but I think the problem with Jonah's team compared to this suggestion from Rod is Jonah didn't really have, he had like 2 bona fide closers on his team, and then he had some middle relievers. Like, you gotta win saves if you're gonna do this. But anyway, trying to dominate hitting and win 3 of the 5 pitching categories by foregoing starting pitchers. Al, what do you think about this strategy?
I'm uncomfortable with it just because relievers with the smaller number of innings that they pitch, there's just so much more variability, I should say, with them. Now, granted, your relievers are also, particularly middle relievers, are pretty interchangeable, and you know, you can drop and you know, stream guys in, but and it just seems like a lot of work for something that just might not work.
Yeah,
I hate limiting my team's upside, like.
And then there's that.
You're intentionally giving away categories when you don't have to be bad in any category, you know? I mean, maybe it'll turn out that you are, but if you just try and build a good, well-rounded team, you know, it's possible to finish in the top 3 in all 10 categories. And so then you have an easy win instead of this, you know, maybe pulling it out by the skin of your teeth because you finish 1st in ERA, whip, and saves, which, by the way, you may not necessarily do, right, even with if you go with this approach.
Yeah, I think actually an underrated issue with this approach is that you're not guaranteeing yourself better hitters. It's just that's the issue that I think came up in the league that I was in last year, where one owner tried this in a head-to-head categories league. It's like he wasn't beating us in hitting categories necessarily. Even though you've invested earlier picks in hitting, it just there's so many hitters that you have to pick that it doesn't necessarily translate. Okay, good question here from Chet Stedman. I cracked up. This is actually the subject line, I think, of his email. It said Chet Stedman. Do you remember who Chet Stedman is?
I don't.
It sounds familiar.
He pitched for the Cubs in the mid-90s, early to mid-90s, I think.
Ah, yes. Chet Stedman. Gary Busey,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. In the movie Rookie of the Year. The question from Chet Stedman is, Garrett Cole or Matt Harvey? This is a keeper question. Points league, 2 points per strikeout, both to be kept in the 7th round of 23 rounds. Garrett Cole or Matt Harvey?
I like Harvey more. I think there's more upside. He just seems to be a more complete pitcher in terms of keeping the whip low. And I feel like he could go 8 innings more reliably. I know you have concerns over the innings coming back from Tommy John surgery last year, Adam, but I just think he's the better pitcher.
I have concerns over the innings.
I have him ranked a little higher, and with the 2 points per K, I mean, they're both good strikeout pitchers, but I would give Harvey a little edge.
I don't know. Did I have big concerns over his innings? Because he had a whole year off from Tommy John. I think it was Syndergaard or DeGrom that I had bigger concerns of. Syndergaard,
yeah, if I recall, it was Syndergaard.
I remember us arguing about Harvey and the impact his postseason innings are going to have on him next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of them I have some concerns about, actually, or the big three, not necessarily Matt's. I don't remember Matt's.
But,
you know, Tom Berducci wrote his story of pitchers he's monitoring because of a big increase in workload. And I sent it to you guys. I don't know if you saw it. Did you read it?
I did. I even referred to it earlier in this podcast.
You refer to that particular story? I know you referred to Tom
Berducci. Well, I said the 30%, but that's a big part of the column.
Yeah. I don't think he had any of the Mets on there. But he did have Lance McCullers on there, which scared me because I love McCullers. Yeah. And he had Carlos Martinez on there, and he's like my favorite player this year. So I think we'll dedicate some time to his story.
He has Syndergaard.
He does?
Yep.
Okay. Well, then let's go to our Noah Syndergaard question. because I know we have a good one, and it is from... Where are you, Syndergaard story? Well, I'll get to the...
I see it.
Okay, I got
Art,
it, too.
Ray, and Jim.
Yeah, it's from Jim from Merced, California. He says, help me out ranking these three pitchers. Carlos Carrasco, Noah Syndergaard, and Dallas Keuchel. How would you rank Carrasco, Syndergaard, and Keuchel?
I've got them Keuchel, Syndergaard, Carrasco.
I go Carrasco over Syndergaard. I don't think there's a big difference between the two in terms of what they bring to the table. Carrasco's just done it for a full season, and Syndergaard hasn't.
You know what I noticed about Carrasco? Look at his ERA by month. He had one good month. He had 1 month with an ERA under 370 last year, 2 months with an ERA under 4. And another thing I noticed, a lot of clunkers. Like, he had a start, Carlos Carrasco, his second to last start of the year. Complete game, one hit shutout, two walks, 15 strikeouts. 15 strikeouts at the Royals, who don't strike out. That was the second to last start of the year, 25 swinging strikes. He followed that up with 5 runs in 3 innings against the Twins in his last start of the season. You look at his first start of the season, it was awesome against the Astros, I believe. And then his second start of the season, he didn't get out of the first inning, unless he pitched in relief. But I just saw the game log. It said 2/3 of an inning, and he got hammered. So I don't know what to make of that, because Carrasco was awesome, obviously, in 2014. But 3.63 ERA last year, guys, and 1 month with an ERA under 3.70.
I think he's got the potential to do what Kluber did 2 years ago, which is come back from a season where he had great peripherals, but just, you know, didn't show up in the ERA. Mm-hmm. I think that could happen with Carrasco. But yeah, I do have him 22nd among my starting pitchers, because I just do have some concern about that pattern of inconsistency. But yeah, we've talked about this a lot of times. I mean, I could take these names and put them in a hat and, you know, play a 52 pickup with, you know, all the names that come out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, probably more like, you know, 24 pickup. So for me, a big divider between him and Syndergaard is just simply Syndergaard pitching in the NL.
We've talked a few times before too about how the Indians pitching staff, as a whole, was unlucky last year. Kluber, Salazar, and that was part of the discussion about Carrasco as it was happening last year. So, I don't think it's all on him, that inconsistency.
Okay, so Syndergaard innings. Through 198 2/3 innings, including the postseason last year and the minors, 198 2/3. In 2014, Syndergaard threw 133 innings. So, what's your level of concern there?
Did you count the postseason?
Yes. All minors, majors, postseason included, 198 2/3. That's an increase from 133 the previous year. So, what, 65 innings or so?
Yeah.
65 2/3.
Big, I mean, I'd like it to be lower, but, you know, I don't know. I still see guys like Michael Pineda and Johnny Cueto as being much bigger injury risks, and I don't...
Well, they're not going in the same place as Syndergaard, though.
I know they're not, but I think they just... I'm just saying, I think they have more reason for worry than Syndergaard and the fact that he threw 60 more innings last year. It may come back to bite Syndergaard at some point, but it may be 3 years from now, you know?
Yeah, it might not be rational, but I think I operate pretty much the same way that Scott does on this, that if somebody's already had a health issue, I'm pretty quick to discount them. But if it's just, you know, somebody who's at risk, I mean, just maybe a very slight bit of hesitation, but you know, like I said, I've got him ahead of Carrasco, who, you know, I have a pretty good amount of confidence in.
Okay, I look forward to talking more about that at a later date. This is from Yancey.
When he's on the DL.
No, like next week. I just want to get to more emails. This is from Yancey. Can you please break down the Chris Coughlin for Aaron Brooks trade? What does this mean as far as playing time goes for Coughlin, but also for Alcantara back in Chicago? I think this, he might have sent this before the Fowler signing.
Yeah.
Alcantara needs to get in line. Well, he already is.
Yancey says, also, what's the best movie you've seen in the last 2 months, and why is it Deadpool?
Well, and you know I don't see movies, so I'm going to
And why is it
Deadpool? Excuse myself.
Well, I think Deadpool apparently is awesome, and we all need to see it.
The best movie I've seen in the last 2 months. That's like, how many movies do I get to see in any 2 month span?
I haven't seen a movie in
just
in
Deadpool.
2 months.
Apparently.
Well, I haven't gone to see a movie since like last summer, so it would be something I caught on TV or Netflix.
Can you think of anything? I've seen some good TV shows.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that's all I've been watching recently.
I only watched the first episode of Billions. And I really liked it. And I watched some of the second episode. I think it's going to be a really good show.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like it a lot. And Better Call Saul, I watched the first episode of season 2, not the second, but it was really good. I like that show a lot. But no movies for me, but I would like to see Deadpool. Anyway, Chris Coughlin in Oakland, interested?
I am. I mean, this is definitely an upgrade for him, and the A's intend to use him as a super utility player who will play almost every day. I mean, it remains to be seen if they'll make that work, but I think there's enough flexibility in that lineup and a sufficient lack of really major roadblocks that they could make it work.
Are you drafting him in any formats, Chris Coughlin?
I mean, granted, they're probably going to be deeper, like 14-team mixed.
Okay.
I think the only movie I've seen in the last 2 months was this low-budget sci-fi movie on Netflix called Timescape.
That
sounds
right. Terrible.
Some interesting ideas. I enjoyed it.
You know, I find myself really reluctant to invest, 2 hours in a movie, and now it's the point where I'm reluctant to, invest myself in a series and just, sit down for that. So my viewing now is like YouTube videos. I can commit to 10 minutes.
Let me tell you.
I'm a big fan of the Casey Neistat vlog for people who might watch that.
Can I tell you my one? You guys are married. I mean, my fiance is the greatest person I have. And she might be listening. She might be able to hear me right now. And I told her I was going to bring this up on a podcast. I only have one issue with her. She loves to watch TV shows with me, and I love to watch TV shows with her. It's like we have a great time. But she's so busy because she's in grad school. So we never really have time to watch TV shows. And before the season starts, like once baseball starts, I'm kind of going to run out of free time because I'll be watching baseball all the time. I really want to watch Billions. And I told her, I watched the first episode, and it's really good. And she, you watched it without me? And now I have to wait for her to watch more episodes? Like, I can't watch Billions. I said, look, we have to watch Making a Murderer together. We have to watch Better Call Saul together. Give me Billions. But no, I'm being a good fiance. I'm going to wait. Probably not going to see it for like 5 years now.
I wish I could say that's a discussion my wife and I never have, but I hear where you're coming from.
Yeah, you got to sacrifice.
Having, being free at the same time for as long an amount of time is easier said than done.
Right, yeah. We only have January for that and summer. Just January. And I am not going to end this podcast ever, because when I do, I have to face her, and I guarantee she overheard everything I said, so it's not going to go well. Anyway, Greg in Houston, I play in a league in which Matt Duffy is shortstop eligible. Don't get mad at me. I didn't choose it. Where would you rank Matt Duffy in your shortstop rankings?
Don't get mad at me.
I was going to say, if I go to the trouble of going to the top 300 and figure it that way, we're going to be way too long, so I'll probably just guesstimate and say I would put him...
Ian Desmond or Matt Duffy?
I think that's about the right range, Adam. I was thinking ahead of Ketel Marte.
I was just going to say.
They do similar things, but Duffy offers a little bit of power.
I'd take Marte over him in Roto, probably just behind him in Roto and just ahead of him in points.
Okay, so that's like around 8th, 9th, 10th, somewhere. Like Al has Marte. Oh, no, I'm Heath.
I have him 11th.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Heath has Marte 8th. You guys have him 10th and 11th, so top 12 for sure. Maybe closer to top 10. Next email. Chris in Denver. What's the deal with Carlos Gomez being ranked so low this year after being a first or second round pick last year? He essentially had three 20-40 seasons in a row leading up to last year, and then he was hurt last season and missed almost 50 games. He missed that many games? I thought he just played hurt. But anyway, Chris wants to know why so low on Carlos Gomez. And we actually had this question a couple of months ago. And quite frankly, I agree with the premise. I think he's underrated, Carlos Gomez.
Yeah, we're just basically ungrateful and not willing to give him any credit for anything he did before last year. it was just the drop off to last year was scary enough for me that I understand if he's healthier, he'll probably bounce back, but I'm just not, I'm really scared off by the risk that he doesn't improve much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are you with me on this, Al? There are certain players who, these super aggressive type hitters with the high strikeout rates. And I assume he's been a high BABIP guy, right?
Yeah.
If they keep doing it year after year, I'm not going to say they're not going to do it because that's just what they do. But the one year they stop doing it, it's like, we should have known this was coming. And so that's why where I feel like I am with Carlos Gomez. Like, I didn't trust the underlying stats to sustain the primary stats to begin with. So maybe this is the beginning of it catching up to him. You know, he's getting older. 30, I think he's going to be this year. So he's not a young player anymore. That all factors into my decision here and not just, okay, yeah, he was injured, so he had a bad year.
Okay. I think that's something that you have hammered into my head, and it's a really good point. And he did play. Carlos Gomez only played 115 games, so Chris was right about that. I see a guy that obviously was injured because he failed his physical with the Mets and they nullified the trade, but he went to Houston and finished really strong, batted 325 with two home runs and four steals in August. And, in the postseason, he went 4-for-15, maybe it was September, but, he got good. He got better later in the year. And in the postseason, he went 4-for-15 with two home runs. So, maybe I'd split the difference between where he was last year and where you guys have it, but
I'm finding rotisserie leagues, I'm much more enthusiastic about drafting him mm-hmm. than I want to be, because there's that chance of power speed that, mm-hmm. you know, at the stage he's going, fourth, fifth, sixth round, there's just not many players who can do that anymore. And if I haven't gotten any speed numbers yet, yeah, Carlos Gomez becomes a high priority for me.
It really snuck up on me how little speed there is, at least based on last year's numbers. And in the AL especially, it's crazy. Last year, Jose Altuve was the only 30-plus steals player, and there were only 12 others that broke 20.
Wow.
I mean, that's crazy.
Wow. Okay, so let's read two more. First one is from... Ooh, I don't have a name here, but he's from Kansas City. And he says, no, we don't have Heath's accent. He says, dear, my three best friends during fantasy baseball season and Heath too. Are Andrew McCutchen and Giancarlo Stanton worthy of middle first round picks? Or I guess I'll just read what he said. I don't know why I changed the wording. Are McCutchen and Stanton worth a middle of the first round selection?
I definitely think Stanton is. I mean, he's 2 years removed from MVP runner up and was off to a great start last year. So I know a lot of people have concerns about his health. And I earlier in this podcast did say that whenever somebody has a hand-related injury, it's scary. So I have him downgraded a little. You know, I have him, I think, fifth overall in my rankings. And I would definitely have him over Donaldson, if not for that. But the power potential is still just far too great for me to wait later than middle of the first round. McCutchen, I can wait.
Yeah, so Stanton, just doing some math. You know, Scott always says fantasy points per game, fantasy points per plate appearance is kind of my deal. He was better than Mike Trout last year. 0.88 fantasy points per plate appearance. I don't know that he's going to slug 606 this year, so maybe last year was a bit high, but still, he has justified the last two seasons. He has totally justified a first-round pick when he's been healthy. And Al... I don't think you had just said it now, but you had said it before. His injuries, maybe they're fluky?
Yeah, they are. I addressed the issue of maybe a lingering hand issue for him, but in terms of him being injury prone, I don't buy that at all. I mean, he got hit in the face, and I think it was earlier in his career, it was hamstring, if I recall, something leg related.
For Stanton?
For Stanton.
Yeah, Stanton.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but it's been, you know, different things that aren't necessarily related.
Scott, why don't you talk about Andrew McCutchen, who was the number 7 outfielder in points leagues last year. He walked 14.3% of his plate appearances. That was a career high. But he's a good walk guy anyway. But he was only 14th in Roto among outfielders. Mm-hmm. McCutchen, his steals went down. He only stole 11. And
yeah, that's not... you know, Chris Bryant was a better source of steals last year than Andrew McCutchen, and that was an important part of the package for him. McCutchen was the... well, I guess Mike Trout was when he was stealing bases too, but after Trout, McCutchen was the 5-category player to own. And back-to-back years now with fewer than 20 stolen bases, so I don't think you can count on him being help in that category. I think A.J. Pollock is the preeminent 5-category player in fantasy baseball now, and the only reason I rank McCutchen ahead of him is just because, well, McCutchen hasn't fallen so far that he deserves not to be a first-round pick anymore, but part of me kind of prefers Pollock at this point.
So I'll give you some splits with McCutchen last year, and you tell me what you make of them. Because I am pretty sure last year there were rumblings at the beginning of the season that he was playing hurt, like through a knee injury, and he started horribly. Batted 188 in his first 26 games. McCutchen's next 100 games, he had an OPS over 1,000. He was 336, 437, 581, one of the best hitters in baseball for 100 games, but only 7 steals.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And September and October, so basically just, you know, 1 month, he finished slow, 236, 388, 355. He had a horrible finish, but he did steal 4 bases. If you take away those first 26 games, he had a pretty good year, because the batting average was 292, and that's pretty low for him as well. What do you make of the bad month, great 4 months, bad month splits for McCutchen?
Well, and I think it's at least the second year in a row they got to a slow start. So it all does count. So, you know, again, I still have him as a first rounder.
Mm-hmm.
I do expect good production overall, but the fact that the steals are trailing off means that he's no longer somebody that I've got any interest in the first half of the first round.
Okay, last question here. It is from Kristen from Brooklyn. He says, on Friday's show, last Friday's show, Adam, you mentioned that you don't think you've had a female write into the show, so here I am to represent the ladies.
Did you really say that? Because you know that that's not true.
No, it's not. It had been true, like, last year, since the season ended, maybe. I don't know. I know we have Kayla, but we
remember there was this one, I think her name was Gretchen.
I remember very well, yes.
Yeah, who would write us. She listened to us even though she didn't play fantasy baseball. She just thought we were interesting to listen to, I guess.
I don't know. I feel like.
And then eventually, you know, the series of emails would continue to the point where she got around to trying to play fantasy baseball because of us.
Do you think she left us because we lost EMAC? You think she was just here for EMAC?
Oh, I don't know. Was it that long ago?
Yeah, it was that long ago. Yeah.
Well, that was probably it.
Yeah, it must have been. So, anyway, the question from Kristen. I can keep Yasmani Tomas in the 18th round. Any thoughts on Tomas potentially being a breakout this year?
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible, but there's nothing that he did last year that screamed that to me. An 18th round, actually... It seems a little too pricey for Tomas in a 12-team mixed league.
You might be able to get him after that.
Yeah, I think you should.
Yeah. Kristen, thank you very much for the email. Girl power! Way to go. I got to go face the music with the fiancé. You two have a great weekend. I will not be watching Billions, I can tell you that.
Well, I hope you have a good weekend anyway.
I will. Thank you to Scott now. Scott, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to y'all on Monday. I think probably Monday we will start outfield. So look forward to that.